The Field Museum of Chicago, in Chicago, has a special summer exhibition. It's called Climate Change, and we'll be talking about climate change itself and about that exhibit, which opens this Friday, so just a couple days away now. And Doug Stotz is our guest. He's a conservation ecologist, ornithologist at the Field Museum in Chicago, and I'm really pleased to have him with us by phone today. And I'm hoping that you will join in as well with your questions or comments as we talk climate change with him and the exhibit. Sounds like to me, as I've had a chance to look at a little of the information on it, sounds like it's going to be a fascinating exhibit. And you're going to learn a lot about it today as we visit with him. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Doug Stotz, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. First, let's talk about the Field Museum in Chicago. Tell us about the museum itself.
Well, the museum is one of the large natural history museums. We have collections in zoology, botany, geology, and anthropology. And then we also have, and what I'm part of, is a division focused on conservation. It's called Environment, Culture, and Conservation. And our collections, I don't even remember what our number is. It's something like 28 million specimens. A lot of those are insects, as you might guess. But we have worldwide collections for basically all organism groups, and that resource is used scientifically and also for applied things, in particular helping to think about conservation.
Wow. Well, there's, I think, an overwhelming scientific consensus, at least, that global climate change is occurring during our time. What's this new, how's this new exhibit set up? What is it going to do?
Well, this exhibit is a traveling exhibit that was actually created by a group of museums led by the American Museum in New York, and it will be at the Field Museum from this Friday until November. And the idea of the exhibit is to point out some of the science behind climate change, so the sort of history of climate, the changes in sort of human use of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and so forth, and how our putting carbon dioxide into the environment has gone along with a increasing temperature and other changes to the climate. So it sort of sets up that. It talks about what the effects of those changes are, and in terms of the terrestrial ecosystems, the oceans, what it does to human communities, and it also talks about what some of the solutions we're going to need to put into effect in order to combat climate change. And so it's both things that people can do by themselves and then sort of the technological solutions we're going to need in order to provide clean energy that isn't putting more carbon dioxide in the environment.
And so it's safe to say that the Field Museum staff is on board with the fact that there is climate change occurring.
Absolutely. I think there's little question that there's climate change occurring, and there's a strong scientific consensus that climate change is being predominantly due to human inputs. Now, that's not to say there aren't people that argue against that, but frankly, a lot of them have a economic motive for opposing any changes to how we go about producing energy.
Yeah. Again, the number to call for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And I want to talk about some of the specifics of the exhibit, but and certainly want to do that there. But I wanted to mention, too, that this exhibit is something I think that youngsters as well as oldsters will enjoy and learn from.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's got a number of interactives. You know, it can be looked at a variety of levels. There's a lot of information in it, but there's also some big picture things that people can take home from it, not just the details of how carbon cycles work.
Okay. So, for example, I think you get to touch a one-ton lump of coal.
Yeah, that's part of the, at the entryway, there's a big chunk of coal. It is actually pretty amazing to me how small one ton of coal is.
Well, let's see, a ton, I know a ton of, a ton would probably fit in a bathtub, huh?
Yeah, I mean, a meter cube of water is one ton, and coal is similar in density to water, so it's about the same size. This one is a little irregularly shaped, so it's about as tall as a person and kind of lumpy.
Let's talk about how you put this together. Who was involved in all the planning, and how was it worked out?
Well, the main work was done at the American Museum, where there were two curators that were heavily involved in developing the exhibit. We, from the other museums that were involved, were involved in reviewing labels as they came through and making suggestions to improve the exhibit. And we had several meetings in New York where people came together to sort of discuss major issues relating to the exhibit. But the lion's share of the exhibit was done in New York. One thing that we've done at the Field Museum is we've added some additional local information. So there's a video in the exhibit that talks about RED program, which is reduced emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. And basically, it's about trying to reduce tropical deforestation to reduce the CO2 that is put into the atmosphere every time tropical forests are cut down. And then we have information on the climate action plans that we have around Chicago for both the city and for the region, and how we're sort of planning to reduce the effects of climate on nature. And then we've got another room that has information on what some of the major organizations, conservation organizations, and the city are doing on climate in the city.
So lots there, and we'll take some calls now. If you'd like to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and we'll turn to Vic in Stevens Point next. Vic, hello, thank you for calling.
Yes, you're welcome. I enjoy, I have some time in the summer off to listen to your program, and it's great how you have committed to helping people to understand this topic right now.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, you know, to your guest, how I appreciate the amount of work that they're doing to help people to sort of gently understand what this process is all about, and to help people, especially kids, they can take part in. On the economic side, you know, I think he's exactly right. The battles on the other side are about the economics and not really looking at the science of what's going on. And I think the two can go hand in hand, because we can find a lot of solutions to what needs to be done.
Well, yeah.
That's all I wanted to say, and I just no real questions. But
well,
thanks
a lot, Vic, for your comments. Doug, comment from you.
Well, I appreciate his comments. I really do think one of the issues, you know, people are concerned about the economic effects, but I really do think there are huge economic opportunities in fighting climate change. You know, we're going to create new industries that will be cleaner and better, and there'll be a lot of jobs as a result of it. So, you know, there will be, I don't know, some dislocation. Some people will have jobs that will disappear if we move out of, you know, hunting for oil. But there will be new jobs that will be good jobs, doing construction in solar, wind, and other fields.
Yeah, absolutely. Our guest today, Doug Stotz, conservation ecologist and ornithologist at the Field Museum in Chicago. And he's curator of the climate change exhibit, which opens this Friday, runs through November 28th. And we'll talk with him more about the exhibit and climate change right after this look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about climate change today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, my guest today, Doug Stotz, conservation ecologist at the Field Museum in Chicago. And the museum, he is the curator at the museum of the climate change exhibition, which opens this Friday and runs through November, pretty much through the end of November. Great to have him along to talk about climate change and about the exhibit. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And Doug, we have a caller, Gary, online from Boscobel, and I want to bring him into the conversation. Gary, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. Thank you, Larry. I wanted to propose or ask a get a comment from your guest. I've been involved in prairie conservation and restoration in Wisconsin here for about 35 years, and it seems like the last few years with this climate change and increased temperatures and increased rainfall, the challenge to preserve and conserve and restore our native prairies is getting to be more and more of a difficult task because of invasive species and just more rainfall and warmer temperatures just promotes more invasion by woody species and non-native species. And then along with the prairie conservation has come a deep concern about the grassland birds. And here in southwest Wisconsin, we have issues with the Bureau of Forestry and Fire Control where landowners are being cost-shared to plant grass habitats into trees, so we're losing hundreds if not thousands of acres a year to tree plantings that should be kept in grasslands, and we're struggling with the tightening controls within fire control to prevent the use of fire and maintenance of our fire-dependent ecosystems, and that includes our woodland forest. So I'm concerned that along with our grassland prairies and savannas being controlled to death by bureaucracies and by climate change, our forests are converting. So I'm concerned we're going to start losing some of our forest-dependent, oak forest-dependent bird species, too. So I'd like to hear your guest's comments on those.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Doug?
Well, we have the same sorts of issues in Chicago where we've got a large consortium called Chicago Wilderness that's focused on protecting the biodiversity here. And many of the issues that he just brought up are things that we're facing here. The use of fire is, of course, one of the big ones. It's very hard, I think, for a lot of people to understand fire as a positive force in shaping the ecosystem. But in grasslands and oak forests, it really is. Without it, you get invasives coming in and totally changing the character of those areas. And, you know, climate change will just make those issues more severe. I mean, in the climate change action plan that we've developed for nature here in the Chicago area, one of the points we make is one of the most important things we can do is make sure our ecosystems are as healthy as they can possibly be in preparation for climate change, because, you know, climate change is mostly a threat amplifier. It doesn't sort of work by itself. It works in conjunction with other problems. So things like disease organisms. If you've got a unhealthy environment, you've got stressed plants, and then you add climate change onto it, it just makes those things worse. So it's really important in preparation for the climate change that's coming, not to mention that we've already had, to do everything we can to make sure our ecosystems are healthy. And I feel the pain in terms of fire. It's been an ongoing issue around Chicago as well, where the ability to use fire for restoration work has always been under threat.
Yeah. Gary, I want to thank you for calling. I want to give Chuck in Boulder Junction a chance to chime in, too. Chuck, thank you for calling. Hello.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, I guess. So it's through living in a Midwest here, which has been shaped so much by the glaciers in the past and the ice age, and that ice had been receding for, eons, I guess you could say, and I kind of liken it to a theory of if you set an ice cube out and it melts and it begins slowly to melt, and then as it gets close to the end, that process speeds up. And I'm just, like I said, playing a little bit of devil's advocate and seeing what your guests would think about maybe that man, I think, definitely has an influence, and climate change is undeniable, but maybe in some sense the man's influence is being oversold on the process. And like I said, I appreciate the show, and I'll take my comment off the air.
All right. Chuck, thank you very much. Are we kind of overselling the human role in climate change, do you think, Doug?
No, I don't think we are overselling the human role in climate change. It's undeniable, and nobody who works on climate change would ever deny that there aren't natural changes in the climate going on at all time. That's part of what makes it harder sometimes to pick out what's going on. I think some of the early stages of the climate change that we've seen since the late 1800s were difficult to pick out against background. But the thing that's happened is at this point, it's changed so much that it's outside the range that we've seen naturally. And the other thing is that those natural changes, which are pretty well known, and the exhibit goes into some detail about what climate has done over the last million years or so, we know pretty well what it's looked like, and we're moving outside the range that we've seen before, and the rate of the change is outside the range of change that was seen in previous periods of climate change.
All right. Let's turn to Pete in Baraboo next. Pete, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm inquiring as to whether you're going to have anything at the in the museum exhibit dealing with charcoal as a method for sequestering CO2. And I think this is a huge opportunity that we have, particularly here in Wisconsin, where we're looking at a massive die-off due to the emerald boar beetle to just basically take something like the ash trees and convert them from their wood form into charcoal. By doing so, you will sequester the carbon for geological periods of time. And you can also produce a very good quality wood gas from the hydrogen that the process gives off. Wondering if you're going to do anything along those lines at the exhibit, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
The exhibit talks about a number of possible technologies we could use to sequester carbon and to reduce our carbon emissions. That particular one is not specifically mentioned in the exhibit. There is talk of carbon sequestration as an approach, that one that the caller mentioned is not one of the ones that's focused on by the exhibit. There are many possibilities still out there, and I think that's one of the things the exhibit does talk about, is the fact that this is not an exhaustive selection of possible responses, but is sort of a suite of the kinds of answers we're going to need. And the other point that it really makes is there's not a magic bullet. We're not going to deal with this by bringing one thing and it's going to solve everything for us. We're going to need to use a number of different technologies and approaches in order to get our carbon emissions under control.
Yeah. Thanks again, Pete, for that call. Let's turn to Brian in Plymouth next. Brian, hello to you.
I'm doing good. How about you?
Thank you. Very good.
I just wanted to bring up the point here regarding this whole climate change. I sort of struggle with the way the government and these scientists are thinking about this, because I look back to the 80s when everyone was, the scientists were claiming we're going to go back into an ice age. And then all of a sudden, now last year, we're talking about global warming. But now today, that global warming has now again changed to climate change. And I guess what I'm struggling with is most of these scientists or so-called scientists, which are companies that are being funded by the government for their claims and their allegations for all this, what I'm struggling with is, yeah, you've only been studying it for, what, less than 100 years, and you can say that we can forecast either global warming or cooling, but yet we haven't been studying it long enough. I see, you know, changes from day to day, which you can entail that temperature changes from year to year. And for us to begin with Obama and their administration, what their agenda is trying to tax us for our carbon emissions and for our oil consumption, and point that at as saying, yes, our Earth is getting warmer because of it, I think that's a hoax. To me, it looks to be more of a New World Order, you know, a communist government that we're going to, a dictatorship.
Oh, well, what do you think, Doug?
Well, there are a lot of things to potentially respond to there. In terms of the, I'm not going to, I think, comment on the political aspects of that, except to say that, you know, although the Bush administration spent a long time denying that climate change was an important issue, by the end of Bush's time in there, they had begun to come around on this issue. So, regardless of how you feel about Obama politically, people with a very different political viewpoint have come to understand the importance of climate change. What we do about it is yet another issue, and I think one of the things that there have been real attempts to do is think about how we solve this within our economic system. And so I'll just say that. In terms of this being a hoax, I just can't really accept that viewpoint. I think the one thing, you know, is scientists are all pretty much independent entities, and one of the things that happens is they're always competing with one another. So when you start getting the vast lion's share of scientists all agreeing that such and such is going on, I think there's reason to pay attention to them. It's not like, you know, 50 people get together in a back room and say, okay, what are we going to do to screw up the U.S. economy? And then they go forward. That's not how things work. There's a lot of thought that goes into this. You know, I'm not any different than anybody else here. If climate change weren't real, if we weren't going to have to worry about it, nothing would make me happier. There are all sorts of advantages to not having to worry about this. But I think we really do have to, and I think the scientific evidence is really strong. And because of that, I think we're going to need to think about what the political solutions to it are.
Yeah. And this whole business of climate change versus global warming, climate's kind of a long-term pattern, isn't it? And
yeah, the thing I would say is that global warming is a component of the climate change. I think the reason people have switched from sort of talking about global warming to talk more about climate change is that warming is only one piece of it. The reason it got started talking about first, I think, was it's where we first started picking up the signal that something was happening. You know, so the warming is a simpler sort of response. The response in some of the other factors, especially the precipitation, is much more complex. We are seeing those changes. I don't know how your weather's been recently, but we in Chicago have just had massive storm system after massive storm system. And I don't want to blame any individual storm on climate change because it doesn't work that way. You know, there have always been massive storms. There have always been heat waves. And even without climate change, we would always have those things. But what we do expect to see with climate change is increases in the frequency of those things. And so what you see, if you look at the data, is you do see increases in how common these big storms are coming through North America.
Yeah, I think in southern Wisconsin, we've had a series of what they call 100-year storms. And if they're only supposed to take place every 100 years or so, well, we've had them year after year in some parts of the state. So,
right. And that's, I mean, that's the sort of thing that, again, you can have 100-year storms in consecutive years, and that's not outside the realm of possibility without anything happening. But when you start seeing that happen in a lot of places, a lot of times, that's trying to tell you something.
And we take another call, this one from Brooks in Sheboygan. Brooks, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I have just a quick question. The I've worked in exhibit development, Discovery World, and sustainable energy and things like that. And I know that putting together exhibits takes a lot of input from a lot of different people. And I, for one, I'm fascinated by the science of climate and climate change, and the research that I've done over the last 10 years leads me to just question mark after question mark. And I don't know that I, believe in the anthropological factors that are being, touted as, the main drivers behind climate change. My my question to your guest would be, to what extent, this looks like an exhibit that was probably developed several years ago. Before, and I think over the last couple of years, there's the opposition to anthropologically caused global warming has really consolidated. It's grown in breadth and scope. And I think they're really legitimate questions. And I've talked to a lot of scientists, physical scientists, who say, there's warming involved. But the real question is whether, what's causing it. My question is, how many climatologists and formally trained experts, even though the data is, there's all types of gaps in the climatological record, and there's gaps in the data, but it makes me ask, how many climatologists were brought into your exhibit development? It seems like it would be hard today to end up with the sort of exhibit that you're talking to. Seems like it'd be hard to arrive at that sort of exhibit and say that there is no opposition or that they're driven by the oil companies and so on and so forth. And that's just my opinion, but I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Doug, comment?
The thing I would say about this is he's right that this exhibit was actually put together in large part about 2 to 3 years ago. And one of the things we did over the last several months is we reviewed the exhibit again, and I should say straight up that I'm not a climatologist. I'm not a climate scientist. I come at this from seeing how it's changing the natural world. But, at the same time, I'm literate in the literature, and so I did review it. But we also had a set of, I think it was six climate scientists review it. We had the two curators at the American Museum who were responsible for the original content review it, and we went through this at fairly great length. And there are unquestionably things that you could tweak. There were three places where we are making corrections. The thing I would say about those corrections is they are points that are don't take away from the main story. They are corrections of things that, based on new information, needed some revision. In terms of the developing opposition to it, I should say that although it's very easy for me to sort of blame it on people who are captured by the the oil industry and so on. I recognize there are scientists that don't accept climate change, and they have different viewpoints. One thing that's pretty clear is climate scientists tend to believe climate change much more strongly than meteorologists, and that makes some sense given how they kind of interact with the system. You know, meteorologists are looking on a much shorter scale, see a lot more variation, while climate scientists are looking across a longer scale and see those long-term patterns. And I think that plays a big role in where some of the opposition comes from.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, despite the fact there are opponents out there, the reviews we got indicate that they saw the science in this exhibit as still fundamentally sound and in many places maybe understated, where we could have made a stronger statement. I have to say that although politically the opposition to climate change has come together over the last 3 years, I don't see them as really making a dent in the fact that climate change is real and that the human addition of CO2 to the atmosphere is a primary cause of it.
Yeah. And there, I was just looking at a Stanford study. It was a national study done on a public opinion in the United States regarding this area. And I think it was 86% of the respondents, there was about 1,000 people surveyed across the nation, said they wanted the government to limit the amount of air pollution that businesses emit. 76% favored limiting business emissions of greenhouse gases in particular, which is a fairly large percentage. And about 84% favored the federal government offering tax breaks to encourage utilities to make more electricity from water or wind or solar power, and huge majorities favored government requiring or offering tax breaks to encourage things like manufacturing cars that use less gas or appliances that use less electricity, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, and I think I saw that same thing reported in the public press, and then I also looked at the articles that group produced, and it's a really interesting thing. I think they make the argument that some of the polls that have suggested the public is bored or not interested in this, in some ways, are sort of asking the question, so that it's not really about what you think about climate change, but what it is you think about the people who are talking to you about climate change. And that's a different kind of question.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
A lot of times, you know, even people who aren't convinced that humans are a major cause of it usually acknowledge that something is happening, that the climate is changing.
Yeah.
And there's no question from a scientific standpoint that the mechanism that's been identified of increasing CO2 leading to heating of the planet is sound.
And with that, we have to conclude. Doug Stotz, thank you so much for being with us today. And please, you can go online to the Chicago Field Museum in Chicago and find out more about this exhibit. It's a fascinating look at climate change here in the state. Again, Doug Stotz is curator of the climate change exhibition. Thank you all. Thanks to Doug, and thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.